Howdy, folks. Welcome back to Lords of Order, a DC's Dr. Fate fan podcast. I'm your host, Ed Moore. Beware, there will be spoilers. For this 152nd episode of the show, I'll be looking at All-Star Comics issue 71 on sale December 27th, 1977.
But first, a little word from our friends.
Back in 1940, eight sensational heroes united to create the world's very first superhero team, the Justice Society of America. Now, 85 years later, we're gathering podcasters and bloggers from around the globe for a month-long celebration in an event we're calling JS April. Throughout April 2025, join dozens of all-star podcasters and bloggers as they each share their own unique tributes to the original and greatest superhero team, covering exciting topics like
Superman Family Number 211, October 1981.
Mr. and Mrs. Superman attend the wedding of Batman and Catwoman.
JSA Number 1 from 2024.
JSA 68 through 72.
All-Star Comics Number 58.
JSA Number 59 from 2004.
Justice League of America 171.
And Justice League of America 172.
The legacy of the JSA character names.
The Brave and the Bold, number 61.
The Golden Age Wonder Woman JSA Adventures.
JLA, JSA, Virtue and Vice, 2002.
DC Special, number 29, featuring the untold origin of the Justice Society.
Infinity Inc., annual number 1. JSA number 38, and the Stargirl TV series.
Justice Society of America number 6 from 1993.
Justice Society of America number 20.
Justice Society of America annual number 1, 2008.
Justice Society of America number 10 from 2007.
All-Star Comics number 4 from 1941.
The Wonder Woman Spectacular from 1978.
Celebrate with JSA 85th birthday cookies.
The 1986 7 Infinity Inc. and Outsider Specials.
Wanted, the World's Most Dangerous Villains number 6 from 1973.
The recent Alan Scott Green Lantern miniseries
examining the role of the Justice Society in the crisis
and the effect the crisis had on the team.
More Fun Comics 55 from 1940.
Contrasting the Justice Society of America versus Marvel's Invaders.
In Post-Crisis, how the JSA inspired the JLA.
Justice League of America number 29 through 30, plus the Flash number 123.
Golden Age Origins number 1.
Showcase number 97 to 99 from 1978.
The Justice Society versus Extant.
All-Star Squadron issues 19 and 20 from 1983.
All-Star Comics issues 60 to 63.
JSA number 56 through number 58 from 2004.
JSA, the Liberty File.
Justice Society of America, thy kingdom come.
And that's just some of the topics that will be covered during the celebration. Get ready for a thrilling month of beloved characters, fascinating insights, and incredible stories. Follow the action on social media with the hashtag JSApril. And visit our website for a complete list of participating podcasters, bloggers, and what they're each covering at fireandwaterpodcast.com/JSApril.
And I will include a link to a full list of participants in the post. Now, if you do want to get in touch, Teal Productions is on Facebook, Twitter, and Blue Sky. Teal as in the color, T-E-A-L, Productions. Lords of Order has a Facebook page as well. The Dr. Fate Fan Podcast at gmail.com and bigtimenoise.com/Dr. Fate. Those are all the best ways to get in touch with me. If you can come up with another way, let me know, and I'll try to monitor that way as well. Now, this story was written for us by Mr. Paul Levitz, penciled by Joe Staton, inked by Bob Layton, lettered by Ben Oda, and colored by Adrian Roy. You can find it reprinted, if you do not have an original, in Justice Society Volume 2 from 2007. Showcase presents All-Star Comics from 2011. All-Star Comics Only Legends Live Forever, 2019, and all of those, including the original book, were published by DC Comics, which makes sense because I did say this was a DC's Dr. Fate fan podcast, so you would think that's where they came from, but, you know, who knows? I can't attest to what everyone out there may be thinking as I say the different things I say, because I say many. All right, front cover All-Star Comics presents the Legendary Justice Society for 35 cents. And in case you're wondering, this is approved by the Comics Code Authority. Little postage stamp there. Showdown with the Strike Force. And we have an image of three of our Justice Society members fighting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, at least 6 Strike Force members in... it's kind of rough. Maybe, well, if you read the story, you see it's obviously a stadium because that's one of the settings. But from the drawing, maybe you get that. It's hard to say. Now, the Strike Force members do have numbers on their helmet in case you do not know which one you are talking to, because they are all garbed similarly. Number 1 is the dude in charge, and it goes from there. I see on the cover a number 12. In the story, there is a reference to a number 11, so they definitely go to 12. I would hope they have more members than that, but I don't know for sure. Now, these handful of Strike Force members are fighting Wildcat, Huntress, and the Star-Spangled Kid. The previous two mentioned Fisticuff Lee fighting, and the formerly mentioned is absorbing, looks like some sort of... energy beam from off panel. It's striking him in the chest. We are told the deadliest game in town. So it's Showdown with the Strike Force, the deadliest game in town. Almost sounds like song lyrics or something, doesn't it? All right. Earth 2, a world much like our own. No, I can't do that. There's another show out there that did that. And I never really knew until recently where that came from, because I never paid attention to where it might have come from, and then it dawned on me one day. So, yeah, that's me being a 56-year-old doofus. Instant replay. Seconds ago, the ransom scheme of the Strike Force went awry when the man called Number 1 discovered his so-called captives were free. And that basically is the lead-up to this, and that is directly what happened last issue episode. Now the question at hand is, will they live long enough for their freedom to matter? For the answer to this issue and other equally vital issues, play the deadliest game in town. And we have our three cover members of the JSA, the Star-Spangled Kid, Wildcat, and the Huntress, being held at bay by two gun-wielding members of the Strike Force. Suddenly, after the standoff here, Huntress reaches down. I think she reaches down and unstraps a handheld crossbow from her shin, I guess. Shoots one of the members and tells the other two boys to come on, let's grab their attention while we can. And so Star-Spangled Kid juices one with some energy, star matter beam, cosmic beam. And Wildcat engaging in his typical former world heavyweight champion fisticuffs, slugging Sluggo, Huntress kicking away here, chirping, Wildcat punching, chirping. No need to be so formal, scum. You can call me the Huntress. After all, you are my prey. And I always get what I hunt. Couple panels there, I think, you know, trying to be a little edgy and coming off kind of kitschy, if you will. Fight is going the JSA member's way until Star-Spangled Kid gets juiced by some kind of ray gun here in the back, which flings him through a wall. And so as the fight now goes from in whatever structure this was out to the playing field, which, if you remember last issue, a newly constructed stadium, which was an outdoor field. I forget if it was baseball or football. I'm going to presume it was a baseball field. Had been constructed, and the construction company had also built the headquarters and necessary rooms for the Strike Force underneath, because it had been built by, well, we find out now it had been built by a Pemberton, which, if that name sounds familiar, it should, because that is the last name of Star-Spangled Kid, and for all intents and purposes, he is the namesake. He's the Daddy Pemberton. Even though he's only 18, he'd be 70-some, I think, by this time. 60-some. But because of his powers and because he was spirited away, which is why he's even in 1977. So between the two, he is... The years are a certain number since his birth, but him physically is not that same number in age. Bring the blaster carriers forward, number one says as he's laying on the ground, partially defeated. Check, number one, all systems primed. So they've got some tanks rolling up and they start blasting away at the JSA members here. Star-Spangled Kid steps in front because he can absorb that energy, giving Huntress and Wildcat time to get away, which Huntress is all about, but Wildcat is not. She is of the live to fight another day, and Wildcat is of the you never leave a member behind. So they're kind of cross purposes until finally he comes to the same conclusion she does as they're swinging away, which Huntresses want to do because she's related to the Bat family. So they all do their boomerang swingy things. Wildcat sees approaching police, but also hits a signaling device in his gauntlet, which is supposed to signal... I'm not sure how many... I think it's supposed to signal everybody. But the story just takes us to the laboratories where Jay Garrick works. And he and Alan Scott are there talking because Jay, Flash, has given Alan, Green Lantern, a job because Alan Scott recently lost his job. So they talk a little bit. Then we cut to the namesake for the show, which only has about 3 pages in this book. So this book sucks. Well, no, I'm kidding. It's not quite that bad, but it is kind of disappointing. I mean, Dr. Fate is a major, major character. And instead, we're looking in on the Huntress and Star-Spangled Kid? Wildcat, yeah. But, yeah. And in which haunted Salem, the alarm is heard, and the panel that we have is of Fate's tower with some swishy, swashy energy thing kind of swimming around the tower as you are looking through a partial edge of forest to see the tower, like you're just into the edge of the forest looking out onto an open plain where the Tower of Fate is. But only by ears that know, they will not listen. What? And in which haunted Salem, the alarm is heard, but only by ears that know, they will not listen. That doesn't make any sense. Dr. Fate is hovering here with his helmet in his hand. Well, actually, I guess since he's not wearing the helmet, it's not Dr. Fate. Actually, it is Kent Nelson kind of floating here, sitting crisscross applesauce, hovering in the air with his cape trailing down behind him, holding the helmet of Fate. Yes, perhaps that is the answer, he says, and ends a very alarming looking as far as the way she is drawn. Says, Kent, what are you talking about? And why aren't you doing something about that thing that appeared last issue, we're told by the narrator. If there is something to be done, darling, Fate will attend to it, and I fear there is, he says, as Nelson is putting on the helmet of Fate. Fare thee well, fair Inza. If all goes well, I shall return soon. And he's cut off because he phases into or becomes part of whatever this big shadow thing is here in this panel. Inza screams out his name and says, where did he go? The shadow just swallowed him and they both vanished. And I still don't know what that thing is. The answer to that question is to be denied, Inza Nelson, for a time. But perhaps is better that way. Now, I'll go on with the rest of this issue. It has nothing to do with Dr. Fate, but I'm already into the issue, and so are you, if you're still listening. The next issue that Dr. Fate appears in is All-Star Comics 73. This is issue 71, so 72. I'll read just to keep up with the story, but I won't be talking about on the show, because supposedly there is no Dr. Fate appearance. I will determine that once and for all when I actually read the book, but that's what everything I've seen says. So... apparently, it goes from a couple pages last issue, a couple pages this issue, to no pages next issue, to then hopefully being the main thrust in 73, which is, what is that, almost the end of All-Star Comics, I think? Doesn't it end at 74? I don't have all of my notes here, let's see, in front of me. Yes, apparently it does, because we get a quick Justice League, Justice Society team up, and then... a run in Adventure Comics. So 74 is the final issue of All-Star Comics. But back to this issue 71. We have the Huntress and Wildcat trying to signal other members and not being successful because most of the other members, and there's like, what is there? 16, I think I counted 16 last issue when all of them were there. The vast majority of them are retired. Star Spangled Kid, Huntress, and Power Girl are brand new. So, but they're trying to signal. The signal's not doing any good. We've already run across Jay Garrick, Flash, and Alan Scott, Green Lantern. We see that they're indisposed. Power Girl apparently can't answer because she's involved in something in Showcase number 98. Katar and Shira Hall are in Egypt. Clark Kent is staring down an alien invasion. He's looking at the spaceships from the Daily Planet window. And Charles McNider, Dr. Midnight, is plying his trade as a doctor. So, according to my calculation, that leaves Hourman, Robin, Starman, Wonder Woman, and Bruce Wayne completely unaccounted for. But down here at the bottom of this page, it says, unless the count be lost, note that the 9 members not accounted for are similarly occupied away from their alarms. And on this page, we see Charles McNider, Clark Kent, Power Girl, and the Halls. So they, Jay and Alan have been accounted for. Wildcat, Star Spangled Kid, and Huntress are involved in the story. And those that I mentioned, Hourman, Robin, Starman, Wonder Woman, and Batman are just equally tied up. Although I think those members are all retired as well. So they're only special situation emergency call-ins, which, I mean, this is an emergency because one of the Justice Society members has been captured. That's pretty emergency-esque. We cut back to Star Spangled Kid. He's being talked at by number something. I don't know. I'll say it's number one. I'm not 100% sure of that. And this is where in the conversation we find out that the Pemberton fortune has been used and the man that takes his hat off is a Caucasian blonde gentleman who, I don't know, is related to Star Spangled Kid, but I don't know how because he hasn't had children. So this must be a brother or a nephew or something, whatever. So here, page 11 of the story, we have the full explanation of who this gentleman is. He is Arthur Pemberton. He indicates that Sylvester was his uncle, so this is a nephew of Star Spangled Kid, the gentleman that's all tied up here, which means he is the child of a sibling, right? A nephew? A sibling of Sylvester Pemberton. So either this is either his brother or sister's son. And he claimed the inheritance because his uncle disappeared. And in the next panel, there's 3 panels explaining all this from Arthur's point of view. And then the next panel, the 4th panel in the middle of the page, is of Star Spangled Kid. And he is, well, the narrator is telling us, but I guess you could almost think that he is thinking this as well. Sylvester Pemberton did not walk out on his inheritance. He left his house one morning decades ago to attend a meeting of the 7 Soldiers of Victory as a member of that superhero group. The meeting ended in disaster, one member dead, the others catapulted through a timeless limbo, ending up in the 1970s, unable to pick up their lives where they left off. And this occurred in JLA 100. I believe we probably talked about that several episodes back. That was a JLA-JSA team-up probably 2 team-ups ago, 2 years ago, something like that. Sylvester Pemberton, better known to us as the Star-Spangled Kid, had lost his private life because of his heroism. And they take off. Everybody had come outside because they were transporting Star-Spangled Kid to a truck. And then the truck and those see-through plexiglass flying bubbles that they used in the bank heist last issue are escorting the truck and they leave the stadium. Right after that, Huntress and Wildcat show up and, well, sometime after that, long enough after that, that there are papers blowing around, of course, because the stadium is deserted at this time. It was never completed and it was just left there. That way the strike force could operate without being discovered because the project had just been abandoned and had been just left. But papers are blowing around. The Huntress grabs one, and the headline is $1 million ransom demanded for JSA'er. So this is at least a day after the ransom demand went in, right, for it to show up on the paper. Looking around, Huntress finds a piece of astroturf on the natural turf that is in this playing field. So she realizes, Wildcat realizes that, hey, that's not from around here, so it must have been brought in. If it was brought in, chances are where it came from is where these folks headed when they left here. So Wildcat calls a bookie friend of his, asking about where the nearest astroturf is. And the answer is the Meadowlands Track and Stables. So they head out that way in incognito, which is funny to say, as their regular people guises. They're not showing up in their superhero outfits. So they start looking around. We cut to number one of the Strike Force, and he now has Star Spangled Kid in that trapped in that bubble, but it's gassed now, I guess, to keep him unconscious. It looks to be that all of Strike Force is in some sort of meeting hall, sitting at a big table eating, when one of them just collapses. Number 11, he just collapses because a dart has struck him in the neck and knocked him out, apparently. In swing Huntress and Wildcat. She says that he's too busy sleeping off my tranquilizer dart. That's why number 11 just fell out in his food. A food fight starts, you know, kind of like Animal House. One person jumps up and yells food fight and it just starts flying. Except it's not food that's flying, it's Strike Force members, as Huntress and Wildcat both employ their martial abilities here until Strike Force number one grabs a ray gun and he shoots at Huntress, but she ducks and fortunately it breaks the bubble that Star Spangled Kid is in. Huntress uses some sort of reviving gas nodule that she carries around on her belt, like all the Batman family does. They have that utility belt concept down. They should like try to patent it or something like that, because boy, they use it like nobody else. It does resuscitate him, and then Huntress and Wildcat continue their martial fisticuffs while Star Spangled Kid starts making with the cosmically endowed energy beams here. Finally, they defeat all of the Strike Force members. The final blow at Strike Force number one is from Star Spangled Kid, and after that, he announces that he must take a sabbatical. Because he's going to, I guess, pursue the reacquisition of the monies he lost, particularly since he sees that they're being used for dastardly deeds, done dirt cheap. Well, no, they're not dirt cheap because there's a fortune there. But final page catches us up with the halls. They are reading some, dare we say, hieroglyphics on a big panel, and we're told, perhaps, but what of those things that are done by beings that are more than mortal men? And that verbiage is in reference to what Star Spangled Kid said in the panel above. Being such as the one casting the shadow on the sands behind Carter and Shara Hall. Sorry, I said it was Kator Hall. This is Carter Hall. The all too familiar shadow. Well, I don't know. Next issue, the narrator tells us the sinister shadow strikes again. I guess that's the shadow that was in Dr. Fate's tower, I guess is why they're just calling it a shadow. The JSA reunited, Wildcat on the verge of death, and the return of a golden age great, a thorn by any other name. So I wonder if that's Alan Scott's thorn that pops back up. Mother to who? Rose? Is that the character she's the mom of nowadays? Anyways, she's somebody's mother. This was when Alan Scott was interested in the opposite sex before he, I don't know, changed his mind or realized that he was interested in the same gender relationships. Explain that, DC. All right, guys. The story was okay. It was entertaining. I managed to read the whole thing, of course. A couple pages of Dr. Fate kind of sucked. The fact that they think so little of Dr. Fate that he's not even in the next issue, which again, as I said, I'm not 100% sure. I'm relying on other sources to dictate that to me, but I will read the book just to see. Otherwise, the next episode of Lords of Order will be discussing All-Star Comics 73, which is the penultimate issue. I like that word. Penultimate issue of the All-Star Comics, the first volume run. And so with that, send me some feedback. Let me know how things are going in this 2025, how things went in 2024. Just let me know whatever. I'll talk to you guys next time. Ciao.